Welcome back to the Missing Maura Murray podcast. I'm Tim, here today with Lance in the Crawl Space Studios. How's it going, Lance?
It's going very, very well. How are you?
I'm doing well, too. The majority of this episode, Lance, is a really interesting conversation with an old friend of ours, Josh Leonard, who accompanied us on our trip to Quebec with James Renner back in 2013 as part of this documentary that we've been working on.
We kept talking about when the right time was to have Josh on the show because he was such a central part of the our introduction to Maura's case and to jumping down the rabbit hole. He was essentially there in that initial jump. When we went to Canada with James Renner, we called up Josh and said, grab the camera, grab your passport. We have this adventure that you'd definitely want to be a part of.
Yeah, he's like, what passport?
Exactly.
But we'll get into it in a little bit. But before we do, because that content, that conversation is not really about information in Maura's case. It's more about the documentary, some inside stories, some behind the scenes stories about what that trip was like. But it's also about obsession in general in regards to this case.
Exactly. We went down some really interesting paths with it when we talked about how you define obsession. In what circumstance do you say, I am obsessed? And no, I'm not obsessed. I'm just thoroughly doing my job. And sort of how you reason with yourself why you're doing something that you probably wouldn't do in normal circumstances. So it got a little deep on occasion, and we're playing this episode, and we did this interview not because there isn't new information out there on the case. We are constantly working on new information and sifting through and making plans. We did this because we do have the screening coming up, and we kept saying, when are we going to have Josh on? Because again, he was an integral part of our trip to Canada, and the timing is just perfect. And also the timing with Josh himself, he works all the time, so we took advantage of when we could have him on.
Right. So you mentioned the screening. We do have a screening of this Quebec Search section of our documentary called Finding Maura Murray. It is coming to the Rockwell Theater in Somerville, Massachusetts on Sunday, June 24th at 6 p.m.
Now, where can we get tickets for that? And I heard there's a portion of the proceeds going to the Find Maura Fund.
Yes. So you can get tickets on either of our sites, mauramurraydoc.com or crawlspacepodcast.com. And yes, $5 from each ticket sale is going to the GoFundMe account to help raise funds to put back into the search for Maura.
And the screening is sponsored by PI Magazine. Nicole and Jim over there at PI Magazine have offered a code. I believe it's going to be MMM, but we'll have more details for that when we give links. But there'll be code for anybody who wants to sign up for an annual subscription. It'll be at a discounted rate of $29.95, down from $39.95. And they will also offer $5 of that to go into the account, the GoFundMe account.
Now, what's Pi Magazine?
Pi Magazine, it's actually PI, stands for Private Investigator Magazine.
Oh.
And it is the number one resource, print resource, and online resource for private investigators out there. So
okay.
It's a trade magazine for private investigators.
So if you're a PI out there, you will have known what that meant, not PI, and you might already subscribe to it. But if you don't, please do now. It's quite a resource for you.
And they will be there during the show, and they will have copies to give out. So who knows? Maybe if you're an aspiring private investigator, you can check out this magazine, and that'll put you over the top.
Great. So now before we get into the conversation, the interview with our director of photography, Josh Leonard, we just wanted to mention a couple of things that have come up recently. A couple emails. I know the last episode we did was about emails. And before we get into Brock's email, I just want to mention the reply from Lee's email, which was about swearing and about how we say the F word and take the Lord's name in vain. We got a lot of comments saying, please do not stop that. So it puts us right back in the realm where we were originally.
Right. I'm just going to, whatever my gut is going with, I'm going to go with.
Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately that the swears in the Crime Con episodes were probably more because it was a live show and it's a little less editable when it's live. So anyway.
But sometimes when you're talking about this subject matter, you know, a goddamn slips out. Because sometimes you just don't know how to articulate the unbelievable circumstances and situation you're talking about.
Okay, well, speaking of, let's mention this email from a really thoughtful listener named Brock. Sends us a very bullet-pointed email, which I know you love, Lance.
I love bullet points, and I love, he didn't do it, but color coding works for me, too.
Yeah.
Bullet points, bold, underlined, and very well organized, and we didn't mention it last time. Apologies to Brock. We didn't mention it last time because we missed it. It went to our personals.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and so he asks a few questions in this email. He says he has wondered sometimes, were all the neighbors' eyes truly glued to the car through the window, or were there periodically spots where they were not looking out their window? And we don't have any insight, as he asks, but unless there's information that these people have that we don't know, the answer has to be that they were looking away at certain times.
Also, we wanted to talk about someone named Jim Cross.
Yep.
James Cross. And this theory had always sort of been on the peripheral of our thinking, but it was Mr. Cross who came up with and really articulated it well, that Maura might have just snuck back into the woods a little bit, or maybe, as you think about it more, maybe she went behind the weathered barn, or maybe she went down Old Peters Road and waited 2 or 3 hours, and we got then it shows that tunnel vision that we have when looking into it. When we've been doing this for so long, and it took so long just to open up at least my mind about that possibility. We just got so hyper focused on this like 4 minutes or 7 minutes, and it really could be an hour and 4 minutes.
Yeah, you're saying Maura could have just jogged up Old Peters Road and kind of waited out the cops. I mean, I think we discounted because we've heard they've searched. We know they searched around the barn. There were no footsteps in the snow. So that's kind of where I think we get to where we got. But it is true, and we have said this from the beginning. It is possible that Maura jogged up Old Peters Road and has been there ever since. But throughout all the searches that have been done, she has not been found still. So that may have happened, and she still may have left, or she might still be there and still no one's found her. I don't know.
But it's these emails like Brock's and like Jim that'll keep the juices flowing.
Right. It's a good thing. And speaking of James, so James started a blog too, which we found pretty interesting because he kind of took the viewpoint of someone who is just learned about this case. And that's different from most of the people who are listening right now. They're people who have followed this case for years, and they might already have some confirmation bias going on potentially, or some ideas in their head, who knows. But this is someone who looked at the case a few months ago and kind of dug all the way in, listened to the whole podcast, watched the Oxygen Show, and even read Red Renner's book. And he's come out saying he thinks Rick is guilty.
Rick Force here.
That's right.
Right. James Cross is a really good example of that. He's a really good example of the type of person that gets involved in this, gets swept up in it, and just recently he sort of announced his retirement to it as well, and he said that it's been 5 months of nonstop amateur investigation into it, and that is the typical sort of shelf life of the type of person that approaches this alone.
Yeah, so if you dive in like that, it's real hard to stay in.
Right. I would say to James Cross, don't take 100%, you know, of yourself out of it. Just learn how to do it on the weekends. Learn how to, you know, make notes and then go live your life normally, for lack of a better word, outside of that. But don't see it as something that's a all in or all out situation, because you do have really good ideas. And all of that theorizing and, you know, emailing to us and messaging us sparks something. It does shake stuff up still. Keeps it less stale. I just want to say one quick thing to Brock. He lives in Louisiana, and he has a little note here about meeting us. Well, CrimeCon is in New Orleans next year, so go on their website, book your tickets, and maybe we'll have some Harry's Razors for you.
June 2019. Okay, so thank you very much, everybody, for listening. We hope you enjoy this conversation with Josh, and please understand that it's not about new information. It's more about the obsession into Maura Murray's disappearance. And so I think you'll enjoy it and come out to the Rockwell on June 24th, 2018. Thank you very much. Here we are with our director of photography from Finding Maura Murray.
We have the one and only.
The one and only Joshua F. Leonard. What's up, Josh?
What's up, guys?
How do you like being here in Wormtown in our crawl space studios in the black box, as we have never called it?
This is this is awesome. I love your studio, and I live in Worcester, so Wormtown is my home. So I'm psyched that you guys record out of here. This is awesome.
Well, thanks. Yeah, and we're psyched that you have been have been working on this movie with us for as long as we've been doing it, which is almost 4 years now.
Right.
And we're really psyched about this upcoming screening, June 24th, and you're going to be there.
Yes.
And we're going to do a little Q&A after the screening at the Rockwell. So right. if you didn't know that this screening was happening, it's happening in Somerville, Massachusetts, June 24th, 6 p.m. And us three are going to be there. We're going to play about an hour and 20-minute cut of the Quebec search section of Finding Maura Murray. And then we're going to talk about it afterwards.
And I just want to give the shout-out to PI Magazine, who are our very generous sponsors for this show. They operate PI Magazine, which is a resource for private investigators. And they will have copies of the magazine there. Tickets are $15 for the show. $5 of that 15 goes to the GoFundMe, the Find Maura GoFundMe account. And the people from PI Magazine have generously put up the offer to at a discount. They will also donate $5 from the annual subscription. So their usual subscription is $39.99. They are going to offer a discount of $29.99 for people who use the promo code, and $5 of that will go towards the fund as well. So that fund, as we've said before, it goes to ground penetrating radar, billboards, organizing searches with lodging, and possibly a reward. There's a lot of use that $10,000 or more can have in this case. But just wanted to get all of that bookkeeping out of the way.
Yeah, and we wanted to dive into the story of what we're screening, and really just your experience so far in what the heck this project has been. Like, what's it been from your perspective?
Well, it's interesting because I wasn't that familiar with it going into our trip to Canada. Lance had talked to me about it and sort of told me about all the weird elements and the things circling the case. And
surely not all the weird elements.
Well, no, I guess everything. Or
you got to keep some in your back pocket.
Right.
Well, so many have been uncovered since.
Of course. Changed. But the things that he was aware of at the time, which was what? 2013?
Yes, December of 2013.
Right. So I remember just getting like in a nutshell version of it, and I was like, wow, that's very bizarre. You know, it's a very strange case. And of course, he was very interested in it. And then one day I got a call, and it was like, hey, we're going to Canada. Do you have a passport? Do you want to shoot? And I'm like, yeah, I want to shoot. I don't think I have a passport. So we were going in like a couple of weeks, and so I had to rush and get a passport and all this stuff, not exactly knowing what we were going to try to do, just sort of getting like bits and pieces of it. And I was like, you know, how much money do I need to bring? And Lance is like, I don't know. I'm like, how long are we going to be there? And he's like, probably the weekend, but I don't know. And I was like, where are we going? He goes, Canada.
Small place.
Small, yeah. I mean, right. North.
It's a little quaint island.
So, yeah. I was just like, okay, all right, we're doing this. We're going. And of course, you mentioned James Renner, but I wasn't that familiar with him. You know, I mean, it was just a name to me at that point. I knew. I think you told me about the blog that he had at the time. And
why the leap of faith then?
Well, I just want to give a little backstory. That actually is a good question. Why the leap of faith?
Oh, thanks. I finally asked a good question.
I know, it's 79 episodes later. No. So just for the listeners, just a little bit of backstory. Josh, Tim and I have known Josh for like decades,
almost 20 years.
Almost 20 years.
Yes.
And any project that we have that's creative, that involves any like level of camera operation, writing or even any sort of like artwork that is done, whether it's if we do a live show, we need like flyers done. Like we lean on Josh for a lot of stuff. And Josh is the guy who you can call up and say, oh, there's this missing woman in New Hampshire that we're sort of obsessed with. And there's this guy who writes a blog about it, and he thinks she's in Canada. And we're shooting a documentary on it now. And we want you to pick up this camera and join us in about 2 weeks to, no, it wasn't 2 weeks, but it was a month. It was at least 2 months, right? Because you had to get
no!
there.
No!
What was it?
No, I had to rush it. Like, I had to pay extra to get it in like 2 weeks. For reals, though.
But you had a passport already, and this was like you had lost your passport.
I did not have a passport.
So you would not have a passport.
I did not have a passport.
I didn't know you could do it that quick.
Well, yeah, I think it has to be like you can do it in 30 days, but you pay an extra fee.
We should reimburse you for that.
Yeah, we should probably pay you for anything, really, that you've done for us.
No, but I was up for the adventure. And like Lance said, we go way back. And I knew that whatever happened and whatever we were getting ourselves into, at least we would be getting into it together. It wouldn't just be me or Lance or Tim. It would be like, all right, it's going to be the three of us with this other guy.
Having gone through it, do you regret it?
No, not at all. Of course not.
Okay.
Of course not. I actually expected much more confrontation, which I am not, like, crazy about. You know what I mean? Like, because we were, like, not to get into the story, you know, already or anything, but, I mean, there were a couple of points where we could have had confrontations. Like, the store, for example, after the after going to the crash site. You know, like
Swiftwater waste.
Yeah, even though I was like, I'm gonna stay in the car and shoot from the car, guys. Like I expected much more weird instances where it could have got hairy, but it never really did. There were lots of points of intrigue, but it was just a great adventure, and I was I was totally all in for it.
One thing that didn't make the cut, obviously, because we couldn't take cameras inside of the border station where they pulled the car over, obviously, we're going to get searched. That's a funny story.
It is.
Why don't you...
Can I?
Would you please?
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, we get to the Canadian border.
After rehearsing what we're going to tell them.
That's right.
Sort of.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, at least coming up with a story.
Right.
We couldn't just simply say what we're actually doing.
Because obviously we had it was four guys, you know, in their 30s. And
in a big white van.
With a car full of camera equipment and sound equipment and a stack like 5 inches high of Maura's face on a missing poster. And, you know, James had his bins of all of his research and everything like that. So, you know, we're sitting in the border, whatever, lobby.
Holding tank.
It's pretty obvious.
Yeah, biting our nails. And the,
actually, now that you describe
out
it, yeah, if you zoom out and take that view, it is obvious. We had camera equipment, audio equipment, and a
500 missing flyers.
Seriously,
flyers.
Like, yeah. And they came
really
to us.
Shouldn't have questioned that.
And they're like, I think one of the first things they said is like, who is this girl to you?
Who is Maura to you?
Yeah, and I think James was just like, oh, that's I'm a writer, and that's the thing I'm working on. But our official story was that we were going to a church.
Yes, yeah, St. Joseph's Oratory in Montreal, which actually people go on pilgrimages to,
right.
Because it supposedly has some healing powers. There's a bunch of steps, and some people, it was like, you know, over 100 steps, I think, and people pray on each step. And there's legend of, like, by the time you get to the top, if you do that, you're healed or whatever. And there's, like, even a part of the church there where, like, people go there with crutches. And by the time they get to the top of the church, the stairs, like,
they're healed.
Yeah, their crutches are hung up on the wall in one of this.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a pretty interesting place. So I only knew... That was the only excuse I could think of. I figured they would leave us alone if we just said we're on a pilgrimage. It's common enough.
We should have actually gone there after hearing you describe it. It sounds
really
like
cool.
A great place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they did let us go. I mean, like, they didn't be like, you guys are weird.
I think they thought about it, though.
Right.
They thought about sending us back.
But
I have a feeling now, after hearing you describe it and then describe the situation, like, you know, four guys in their 30s white van and all of the equipment and everything, they probably hear that story all the time. They probably have people coming through the border.
It's possible.
You know, that are going up there like underage or whatever to, you know, maybe they have like a bunch of weed in their car or something. And they're like, it's probably a red flag when they hear people say, oh, they're going, oh, okay, those guys are going to that church. All right, pull the car over. They're not going to that church.
You don't want to be wrapped up in
customs, border patrol, exactly. That whole situation.
And we had limited time. I mean, it wasn't like we had a week here.
Right.
We were going to look that night as well.
What did they take from us? I believe the only thing they took from us, right?
Was the staple gun.
Yeah.
Which explains why... In the first,
the first
scene that shows Renner putting up the flyers at in Canada, not New Hampshire, he staples the flyer to the tree in New Hampshire, and then the first footage of him with the flyers in Canada, he's just got a little like roll of tape,
yeah,
not even like packing tape, but like Scotch tape,
right? Yeah, buys packing tape later in the trip. They should reimburse us.
Well, we have this whole new trade embargo thing or whatever, tariffs.
Yeah.
So we got them back.
Very timely.
We got them back.
but for me, it was definitely an enlightening experience because I became, of course, wrapped up in the case with you guys and especially, you know, of course, with Renner. I really didn't know a lot about him when I met him, and he struck me as a... super, you know, really intelligent, well-spoken, like witty, dry humor guy. And I've since read his books. Well,
you were a big fan of
I loved,
from Primrose Lane.
I loved it. I read his book in like a day and a half, and I never do that. You know what I mean? I couldn't put it down. So I thought it was amazing. You know, of course that was fiction, and you know it was a very sci-fi slant on it, and I loved it. On our way to New Hampshire. Just hearing his theories and insights and stuff like that, it was easy to get wrapped up in it. And once we hit the crash site, or not hit the crash site, but once we arrived at the crash site and looked around, and it's pretty overwhelming because you kind of like now you're knee deep in it or hip deep in it. You know?
Yeah, he's got a really hypnotic way about him, and we talk about this and. I mean, I don't think I'm insulting him at all by saying this. There is a Renner fog that we talk about where you can say it to yourself and you can have all of your facts lined up for the conclusion of, you know, if you want to know what happened to Maura, you can put all these things together in your head and it can make sense. And then you spend a half hour with James Renner and he can tell you his thing. And all of a sudden, you find yourself nodding and saying, like, okay, yeah, that kind of makes sense. And then, and even though the other part of your brain is going, like, this isn't what you wanted. This isn't what you want. That part of the brain starts, like, falling into the Renner fog.
Mm.
And then you walk out, and it's like this thing that still stays with you for a few hours after. And after a while, you come back, too, and you're like, I just got fogged by Renner. So what you just described was the Renner fog.
Right.
Continue, sorry.
Right. It was just interesting to feel like, you know, you're on the hunt, you know, and it was very interesting to feel like we were with someone that had sort of inside information or something. And again, I wasn't as wrapped up in all the intricacies of this case. So kind of just jumping into the van and going and hearing about everything on the way and shooting everything, you become very enveloped by it all. I was kind of expecting to find her when we went because I was so convinced in a way.
No way.
For real. I mean, there was definitely a part of me that was expecting to find her, even though... As Tim says in cutting like the documentary, that I was sort of this voice of reason where I'd be like, you know, we're never going to find like one person in this city or, you know, a needle in a haystack or whatever. But there's definitely a super optimistic side of me where I was believing that somehow we were the ones that were going to stumble upon certain things.
Yeah, and I think by the time Sunday rolled around, and we were there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Mm-hmm. By the time Sunday rolled around, we were all like, you know, we're not going to find anything.
A little disenfranchised by that. Yeah. Or whatever you want to say.
Right, yeah. Right. And even though I think we were all kind of hopeful at one point, and we actually have some a clip here that we can play from that Sunday.
You feeling good about finding her tonight?
I'm feeling good about getting some leads. I don't think we're going to find her. It's fine. It's already been a pretty remarkable journey.
Unsuccessful, though, no?
Yeah, to find success.
Yeah. I think we're... Well, we set out to find someone, and we haven't done it.
Well, we set out to make a documentary.
Okay.
He set out to find somebody. You think we're going to find her? Find some good leads?
No, I don't. I don't think we'll find her today. I don't know, it makes you second-guess the leads that we had here in Sherbrooke. You know, see what happens at that gym today again.
And so that just kind of goes to show, like, we were thinking about it. We were, you know, obviously hopeful. We were still going to... We were about to go back to a place that we had gotten a, yes, she does look familiar.
Right.
And so that, but that was on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we were really hopeful after that. And then it just kind of wore you down as right. the weekend went on.
It was a perfect setup to like this unintentional story arc of the Canada trip, that the place that we got that, the best feedback, the best lead was at this gym, and it wasn't just, oh, she looks familiar. It was, she was in here 2 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago. But it wasn't, yes. wasn't like, I'm not sure, right? You see the woman say that, and it wasn't, it didn't look like there was much of a question in her mind. This is a woman that comes to this gym, and she was here very recently. And it was, how far from our hotel?
Yeah, it was like next door, like 100 yards.
It was
yeah.
the next parking lot.
Yeah. yeah.
So that's just such a perfect story arc, unintentional, for this whole trip, that the first place that we go to, and I think we made a joke that wasn't actually on, it wasn't captured, that, like, could you imagine if she was literally in the next parking lot over from right. where we decided to stay when we came up here to look for her?
Right. Was it, like, serendipity or whatever you want to say?
Fate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can see from your point of view, and this is the first time that you've actually said that, you know, there's
yeah.
a side of you that I don't want to use, I think it's an overused term, but cautiously optimistic, because it was like, cautiously isn't the right word to use mm-hmm. right there, but you, for lack of a better word, we were all cautiously optimistic. Mm-hmm. And then the first thing that comes out is this, and it's like, shit, if it's not here, then I mean, hearing you for the first time say that you were cautiously optimistic about finding her when Tim and I have been watching all the footage, it's like, well, goddamn, Josh is like the rock in this whole thing. Josh is like, not Dwayne Johnson. Josh
if
is...
If only.
If only.
He looks just like him, though.
Yeah.
He's got the tattoos, too. But, no, looking at you being like, if there's ever a way to categorize each one of these characters, Josh is the viewer. Josh is mm-hmm. the person who just learned about the case, who comes up to Canada, fires up the camera, and the first place we go is the best lead ever.
Right.
I didn't even think about it until now that at that point you were probably thinking, oh, this is real.
Right.
This girl could be here.
Right.
Hey, Lance, did you know that Blue Apron is teaming up with best-selling cookbook author Chrissy Teigen?
I love Chrissy Teigen.
I know.
We were just talking about her.
Yeah, and she's going to bring you some of her favorite recipes so you can make them at home. Now, I know you know everything about her, but did you know that she cooked?
I did hear on the wire circuit that she was a fabulous cook, and I heard that this cookbook is going to be wonderful.
Well, get ready for 6 weeks of wildly fun, flavorful cooking featuring recipes like garlic and soy glazed shrimp with charred broccoli and hot green pepper sauce.
I bet she makes a mean sesame chicken noodles with bok choy.
And did I mention that you don't have to step foot in a grocery store to
I
get
hate
these?
Grocery stores.
Oh, I mean, Chrissy Teigen doesn't go to grocery stores.
So by not doing that, that makes this whole experience very convenient. Being convenient delivers fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door that can be cooked in under 45 minutes. The menu changes every week based on what's in season and is designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team, this time being Chrissy Teigen.
Yeah, and it's delicious. I mean, we get Blue Apron, and they have a team of professional chefs putting in a lot of care into creating these recipes each week, and they're all really unique and delicious.
And And you get to spend time with your significant other or your family as you do this. You're cooking. It's lighthearted. Some of the best parts of our day happen over dinner. So we want to share that perspective.
Yeah, so check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free at blueapron.com/missing. That's blueapron.com/missing to get your first three meals free.
Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Going into it, I didn't know what to expect. I really, because there was not really like a huge game plan, or at least I wasn't privy to it, or didn't, you know.
No, there was no game plan.
Right, right. I mean, I think I got like, we're going to go to blah, 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 and can't, you know, and blah, blah, blah.
Well, and to be honest, like there wasn't a lot you could have learned before this trip.
Right.
Outside of reading James Renner's blog.
Or Wikipedia.
Well, but really there isn't much.
There isn't much
there
beyond.
Wasn't, we're talking 2013.
Yeah.
So there was only James's blog. There was like a handful of articles, and there was Wikipedia, which is user updated. So you kind of have to take with a grain of salt anyway. So you, like, I didn't know anything about the case. I didn't know anything about the case.
Really? You
no,
didn't
no,
going
no,
into it?
No. I perused James's blog a bit, but I didn't really have any opinion. I was just like, oh, this, you know, this guy has, like you said, inside information on this. And that was kind of where I was coming from too.
Right.
And I mean, my perspective was, I just wanted to make a documentary. Like, it was just an interesting story.
You totally saw all this happening.
Oh man, that is the last thing that anyone expected.
Seriously, right?
Yeah, we had no idea we'd be doing, we'd be sitting here.
Yeah,
4 years later.
James was the only person at the time that had, and he still is one of the only people that has information that most people don't have, other than law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true. He did dig quite a bit.
Yeah, he FOIA'd a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
and
he did.
No one else was doing that at the time.
Yeah. But now, like, if you were to if we were to embark on this journey now, like,
right now, there's been, you know, you guys
so much
and an oxygen show,
yeah.
And of course, like, I'm sure there's a whole, you know, mountain of information out there now. Well, I don't know, but more because of what you guys are doing and what the oxygen show did brought to the masses.
Well, it also maybe opened up the eyes of law enforcement again. So to do this again today, to go up to Canada, if someone were to come up to us and say, I think she's in Canada, because of what we know with, you know, the new things that law enforcement knows and all of the new information, it just would be such a, it wouldn't even be a consideration.
Well, actually, on that point, remember when Texas Crew was like, oh, we're going to Canada. We're thinking of going to Canada. Do you have like some of those contact people, or can you send us that footage of those people in the record store? And we were downright pissed off that they were wasting time and money to go to Canada for this again, because we figured we had already done it, and we were like, well, there's no way she's there, like just no way.
We saw that instantly as a waste of time.
We were honestly furious.
Yep.
Like, I know we don't talk negatively about the oxygen show, and I don't think we should. There's hardly anything negative to say about it, I think. I know you can be nitpicky or whatnot, but keep in mind this is something that exists now that didn't exist before. Like, there's no argument that the case is in a better place now after this show.
True.
Regardless of any nitpicking you want to do about it.
You know why? Because when people talk about the show, they say the oxygen show about Maura Murray.
Yeah.
Just saying that alone is worth it.
But they did go back to Canada in the Oxygen documentary, but I think they only spent a day or two.
I think they quickly realized that we were right. Not to pat ourselves on the back, but I think they realized this is just not, like, even the footage just wouldn't be worth it for them.
As Josh states in the documentary, this is a needle in a haystack. I don't know I think your quote is like, I don't know what he expects to find here. This is like a needle in a haystack. And so they ended up talking to the two people from the record store, which further infuriated us, to be honest, because we have that footage, and we just watched it. And the people, they look at the missing poster, and they're like listening to Renner. And they're like, no, she doesn't look familiar. And they're passing it around. And then he asks about where would an American be if an American came up here to blend in. And so they start talking about a neighborhood and that kind of thing. And then they emailed him like 2 weeks later. and being like, actually, you know what? There was this woman in this tracksuit, I think, and she was on a bike, and maybe, and it's like, first of all, you have this missing poster hanging on your wall. You walk by it. You probably look at it 10 times a day. As we know from going through this experience, we were seeing her everywhere. I'm not kidding. We like, I can't wait for you guys to see what we're talking about, because we were circling a stranger in a parking lot because we thought, wow, she kind of looked like Maura. We literally drove around her. Right. Two or three times in the parking lot.
Yeah, and actually it shows you how that image gets like burned into your brain. When we were watching this again and you added the additional footage of us looking at going to the gym and in this parking lot, and I don't want to give it away, but even us talking about this scene doesn't give it away. You really need to watch this scene.
Oh, no, we could talk all about it. Yeah.
I watched it and I realized something very cool about it, mostly because like the timing that it is in the cut and the arc that it takes us or takes the audience, you see us go on this arc. But Josh really, really verbalized it much better. I just saw it and I said, wow, there's something special about this. But what was it when you saw that scene? What did you think?
Because obviously what we're doing is nuts, okay? But at the time, we were so focused on the, you know, our hunt or the mission that we wanted to see, well, you know, we wanted to see her, and we were just, our senses were all heightened, and we were just seeing her everywhere, like you said, Tim. So yeah, it was just a matter of us seeing what we wanted to see, and being so in tuned to just kind of. Our mind was playing tricks on us in a way. We justify it to ourselves like, oh, you know, we're investigators. We're trying to, you know, bust this case open. But it's also like, well, what you're doing is nuts too.
And we're even describing what we're doing as being nuts. And we're very self-aware that what we're doing is very strange.
Yeah, I think you even said like, this is the strangest thing I've ever done.
Sure.
I
mean,
is it even legal?
Borders on legal.
Right.
It borders on
like, when does stalking
harassment?
Become stalking?
Right.
You know, you don't know. Like when someone complains, that's when it's stalking?
Knowing that now and knowing all of the things that you know about the case, looking back on it, are you surprised at how that bug got put in our heads when we went to the gym? We had gone through all of these like towns and given out flyers. Knowing now what you know, are you surprised that we saw her everywhere? And are you surprised that there are still sightings of her?
No, I'm not surprised at all. Like, really.
And not just us, but the newcomers to the case.
Yes.
And people who are just starting to read James's blog. And
exactly, because...
What blog? His blog's down. His book. Down. Yeah.
Yeah, his book. Yeah.
Okay.
But obsession is obsession. And, you know, your mind is a crazy thing that can do all kinds of things and make you see all kinds of things. And I think we were very focused on finding her. And we all really wanted to find her. It's just so weird how you get wrapped up in the obsession very quickly about it. And I don't know if I'm coming across the way I want to, but yeah, like we were just in the thick of it, and it felt like we were doing this like I don't know, like this operation or like this you know, this clandestine thing in a way, or at least. A good thing, you know, like an investigation, like it, that's what I felt like I was a part of. You know, I know we were making a documentary and I was a cameraman, as you know, as well as, you know, being with my friends on an adventure. You know, I think I was seeing her too.
Obsession though, you know, is such it's such a personal experience to each individual. Your obsession is different than mine, is different than yours. Yours is different than James's. James's is different than John Smith's. But yet we are all there. The best thing I think you can do is try to stay self-aware. But ultimately, it kind of has a negative connotation because to call someone obsessed, you can't be self-aware enough to know how that obsession is coming out of you. You can know that you're obsessed, but I feel like, well, I'm focused on this. I'm like, for example, right now, let's just use the A-frame and the concrete slab as an example. Like I'm sitting here, I think something's going to be in that slab. I'm convinced of it. That's probably my obsession talking.
Possibly, but as you were talking, I started to think about how detectives would approach solving any case, any unsolved case. So, I mean, they have to get caught up in a level of obsession when they're trying to solve a case, and they find clues and they go for the clues and then they dismiss them. So,
but you're speaking about how a detective does work. What experience do you have as being an actual detective or knowing an actual detective? Like, I feel like that is your obsession speaking, because we actually aren't detectives.
Well,
we play that on a podcast.
That's very true. But we have on this podcast, and we've had on Crawl Space, law enforcement and criminologists, and we had a police officer who said that a case is sort of like a house and you need to go through and don't think about, like, you need to open the doors of this mansion and you need to see what's inside, but you need to make sure you shut the doors of the mansion when you've eliminated these things. And just so looking at that, like, law enforcement perspective plus the Moore Murray community and us and how the behavior patterns go, I mean, people are people. Humans are humans. If you are a detective looking into a case and you need to go into a room and analyze everything in that room before you can shut that door, you need to be somewhat OCD about it.
Yeah, and using that example to the Maura Murray case, I do love that example. But using that example, it's like, okay, we close the door because we're sure. And then the next person comes along and boots it wide open.
Yes, right. That's the problem, not the problem. That is the very unique thing with this case,
yeah,
is that we keep saying, like, ad nauseum, you have to, once, if you've eliminated it, that is no longer a relevant fact of this case or a relevant element of this case. But law enforcement has the luxury of their information not being out there to the public. We don't have that luxury. We have people just starting to, and it's great, and I'm not saying this in any sort of a bad way, people need to start listening to the podcast and reading True Crime Addict and just ingesting everything they can ingest on the case. But those newcomers, those people will just, their brain will start clicking and firing on all of these things that we thought we closed the door on.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right.
Yeah.
They're gonna either kick the door in or they're going to at least open the door and go, like, hey, what about this?
Yeah. I mean, a few times a week we get emails from really thoughtful listeners who say, hey, you guys, I'm on episode 8, but have you considered this? And I love the email. Don't get me wrong. Please do not want to discourage anyone from sending emails. But it's exhausting going through that process again and being like, I just want to email, like, have a reply, like a canned reply, being like, just keep listening.
Right.
And they, yeah, exactly. You keep listening. If you put it in your head that the rag in the tailpipe was there for this reason, and you say, well, that's it, and you don't move forward, then you're not going to understand our trip to Canada and where we're at now and what this one moment in history did. This one single car accident did to thousands of people. This butterfly effect that,
exactly,
happened.
I was just going to say that. It's a lot like John Ronson's...
shout out to our buddy, yeah, John Ronson.
Shout out to John Ronson. But it is. It's a real person disappearing, and it's a lot of information from the police that they, well, I don't think they have that much, obviously, because they would have probably made an arrest if they did.
It'd be over, right?
Right, yeah, right. Yeah. So ultimately, they don't have the missing link at this point to solve the case. The disappearance is so mysterious that you don't have much info from the police, which I think breeds that police conspiracy theory. And I think anytime that there's not a lot of information from police, people always look at police. And, well, but look at society today. You have these instances where police are doing bad things. Like they shoot people when they're not supposed to. And I'm not, God knows I'm not saying this about all cops. Most cops are saints. They do the Lord's work. But you know, there are these instances that come up like once a month. There's like, okay, that cop was in the wrong. Some of these you can see both sides on, but a lot of them you just, okay, that guy needs to be fired. He right. should not have that job.
So what you're saying is it that is one of those things that just like sticks in, it's a thorn in your brain, and you've got it in your head, and you look at this case and you say, well, and you don't even know it, right? It's a subconscious right. thing.
Right. Well, that you may have like the twinge of, well, I don't trust the police in your own brain. And if you do, and then you look at this case and you see that why haven't they put out that information? Why would the liquor store receipt be redacted? Well, there's only one explanation, because they're covering shit up. You know, and then on the other side of that is the perception that the Murrays weren't speaking a lot.
Right.
Which isn't the case anymore, which, you know, I think we're all really grateful for. But when 4 years ago, when this adventure started for us, that was the reality, that we jumped into this whole situation never expecting to hear from the Murrays, honestly. I mean, which is crazy to say now.
I know, we've said that before, where you think back on it and it's like
bonkers.
We didn't even think to contact them.
Right. And because we thought that they didn't care, because honestly, we were told that from Renner, a guy who has looked into this case and has a blog and has had more information than any civilian in the case.
And that's the information that we had going into it.
Right.
So what are you going to operate off of? A wealth of information, or your gut instinct on something that you really have no experience with?
Right. So you have a mysterious disappearance with seemingly no answers, and then you have the police not letting out all their information, obviously, because they're investigating a criminal case, or investigating it like it's a criminal case. And then you have a family that has been put through the ringer by the press and by the police. I mean, Mr. Murray sued the state of New Hampshire to try to get information, and like that seems like, well, what? Why would? I mean, obviously, the dad of a missing person wouldn't sue the police if he was hiding something. But then, you know, you hear someone put out there like, oh, well, he did it because he wants the information. He doesn't want other people to have it. And it's like, oh, but in reality, like now looking back, it's all like we're having this conversation now because it's kind of like these points are obvious now.
But you got to go through the journey in order to get here.
It's a whole journey, unfortunately, yeah. and it is unfortunate for the Murrays, because they are totally innocent victims in this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't ask for a process for their sister or daughter's disappearance. Obviously, they don't want that at all, you know, a disappearance of a family member at all. But I'm sure it's. Quite frustrating to hear that the public has to go through their own process before each individual person makes up their mind on what they think happened to their sister or daughter.
Right? Like that is one of the most bizarre things in this whole thing, is that, it's going to happen anyway. People yeah. are going to look into it.
Right.
So you're going to have to say, I mean, have to accept that there's going to be a process with it.
Well, there's no control. I mean,
from an outsider's point of view, it's really easy to say that.
Yeah.
Like me just saying that, like easy. But Julie Murray thinking, I really care about
right.
this person's process. Keep it to yourself.
Right.
We're trying to find out what happened to my sister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and the whole documentary, like, oh, it's about people who become obsessed with your sister or your daughter's disappearance. That's really mysterious, you know, and like that's also really kind of awkward. But ultimately, I think it's a good thing, because we're raising awareness. We're trying to spin this obsession into something good for the case.
Oh, look, Josh is here.
Sorry, Josh.
Well, that's okay. This has felt like old school riffing on missing Maura Murray.
No, I didn't want to interrupt you guys, but I was just like, you know, enthralled.
But this is what happens with it. You start talking about it, and then it becomes something more than just laying out facts. It becomes something like a whole psychological thing.
Yeah,
everything
that you just said, yeah,
on obsession in general.
What occurs to me as an outsider, there's no easy answers, I guess, is what it all boils down to, and that's what like really is what drives people crazy and what like pulls them in, is like there's no real easy answers, like there's no easy explanation, and obviously it's a mystery, and that's what all entices us all. Really, we did interviews which aren't going to be you know, a part of the documentary right now, but it will be eventually.
The version that the public sees on video on demand on VOD, probably later this summer.
Right.
There will be some of the interviews, exactly. But not for this cut. Yeah.
Exactly. So it will be a part of it. And I remember, so we did interviews in the hotel room, and then Renner was interviewing us as members of the crew, and you know we interviewed him as well, but he asked, "What are you getting out of this, Josh? Like, what is this for you?" And I'm like, "Well, as you know, I want to find her for her family, you know." And that was my basic answer. And I think he insinuated, like, "Well, what if she doesn't want to be found?" And I just said, "Well, I really don't know. I don't have a good answer. Yes, I was on the search for this woman so she could be found for her family." And that was my basic base for it all. But it was weird. Yeah, he was just like, "Well, what if she doesn't want to be found?" And I'm like, "Well, I guess she would have reasons for that." And in which case that's a complicated scenario.
And it makes me feel bad hearing you say that, because you said that mystery entices us all. And I don't know if people really get the reality of what solving a mystery like this will do. And when Renner asked you that question, and you were actually faced with that question, and then he countered with, "What if she doesn't want to be found?" And then you realize in your answer, there's no answer that's not going to be 100% selfish. And you have to deal with the fact that this whole
selfish
thing
for
is,
me or yeah, selfish for her?
Selfish for you.
Right.
Because you don't know why she wouldn't want to be found.
Right.
You just know that you need to fulfill this obsession. You need to scratch this itch that just won't go away. And if you do that and she's found and you've just blown her cover for some reason that is selfish.
That was another thing that we were dealing with. I mean, I think it brought it up in quiet conversation just between the three of us, where it's like, what if we do find her, but she's like, "What the hell? Like, I have a life. Like, I ran away for a reason." And we were just the assholes that blew up her spot. And it's like, how do we deal with that? Like, you know, we're like, "Oh, we're making a movie."
It's like going up a roller coaster that is a super steep ascent. And then you think when you're about to drop off and get that big thrill, you don't. It's just flat and it slowly goes down. It's like this anticlimactic
for
moment
us.
That would have been for us when we suddenly realize we shouldn't have even found her in the first place.
Like, whatever personal stake Renner has in this, I know that, like, he was definitely trying to solve a mystery, and I know it's like ingrained in him. Like, it's like in his DNA. Like, he needs to solve a mystery. In fact, there's a part, it's when Renner is reading the letter for Mara wrote.
Oh, the email.
Well, it was the email, yes, to the campground.
Jigger Johnson campground.
Yes, which was very powerful, just, you know, hearing about it. But afterwards, I asked him the same question, and he said that any mystery can be solved.
What do you think about that answer? Do you think that answer was shallow?
It's not a black and white thing. I think he honestly cares. I think he cares very much about her well-being and everything like that. But yes, maybe it's like 60-40 solving the mystery.
Well, I mean, that's nothing that he hasn't said himself.
Right, exactly.
It is his white whale.
And we talked about that, but he was saying like how she went to Melville Hall and UMass. Even bringing up like these kind of out there concepts where, you know, time being cyclical and how like the reason we're looking for her or the reason that she's missing is because we're looking for her.
And vice versa.
Right. He even says, like, you know, if you want to believe that weird stuff, but, you know, the universe, he goes, I believe that the universe is way more out there than we can comprehend, which I also kind of subscribe to.
Road trip conversations tend to get deep
no matter what. Especially when you're fish bowling the Renner fog.
It didn't strike me as I was like, this guy's crazy.
No, but did he seem obsessed?
Of course, yes. And I think he'll be the first one to admit that he's obsessed. And I think his obsession drove him. And what was funny, too,
drove
is
us all.
I think I asked him, like, so, like, you were going to do this on your own, right? And I think it's in the documentary, actually. He goes, yeah, I was going to do this by myself, like listening to, you know, old Twilight Zone episodes, like, you know, in the car. But I'm glad that, like, we're all together doing this.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine, like, you know, what his story would have been if he had done it all himself. You know, maybe it would have been stranger or, you know, or nothing.
He had driven up there and done searches on his own a couple of times, I believe, before he went with us, but not to Canada, just to the crash site.
Right.
I don't know how it all would have gone down in Canada. I don't know.
Right.
I think he needed us.
I think so. I can't personally imagine doing that journey solo.
I also like how it came together so quickly. Just thinking back to like November of 2013 when you, Lance, were like, hey, you want to do a documentary on this? And I was quickly like, yeah, that sounds really interesting. And then you're like, oh, well, let me ask Renner if he's interested in doing something. And he was like, yeah, we need to go to Canada.
Yeah, see, and November.
We were, yeah, no,
and
it
we
was.
Went in December.
Yeah. I know, yeah. Right?
So it wasn't no 2 months or 3 months.
That might be part of the obsession too, like that it just like it's like, oh my god, it gets wrapped up so quickly, like just like a tornado of energy. It's like, oh, we gotta go now,
right?
When like really there was no rush.
There was
obviously
there was no urgency,
right?
But when that communication came through, that email came through with Renner saying, you know, what are you guys doing on this day? It was just like, this has to happen. Because he thought that she was going to run.
Yeah, but he thought she was going to run based on him posting on his blog.
Right.
That we were going to Canada.
Right.
So that's kind of a meta thing. Like, we totally could have waited a few more months or until the spring.
Or never.
Yeah, because it was cold.
In a way, I'm kind of jealous that you aren't still involved with as deeply in the case, because you were during that time.
I was, and in a way I'm very jealous of kind of like what you guys are doing, because I can see myself as a person jumping into the deep end, which I did for, you know, 3 days, I suppose.
What did you think of the Oxygen documentary?
It seemed to cover all the bases. I think it definitely went down every path that seemed viable. It lacks the human experience that I think we experience, you know, that we were part of. You know, our documentary, I think, is very much like another beast altogether. They more or less concluded that she was grabbed by some like opportunistic bad person, right? Even though it was still a window of like what, a couple minutes.
Or at least that she was murdered, was their conclusion.
Right, yeah. Right.
That's what they believed.
So, I mean, it's still, even after that very thorough, very decently funded, you know, public media investigation, there's still questions about it, man. You know, dudes, it's like, it's still a thing.
What,
like,
do you think, dude?
What do I think, dude? I don't know, because I don't think I can speak that as intelligently about it. I really don't know.
You're on the hot seat. What are you talking about? Give us an answer.
We don't bring just anybody onto the hot seat.
Yeah. Okay. This seat is pretty hot. No, I don't know. Unfortunately, I do think she's probably dead, you know? But I don't know how that transpired. I don't know if she got grabbed within like the 3 minutes or whatever.
Well, here's something that we continue to learn,
but you guys
about
don't make
ourselves.
You guys don't make theories and stuff, right?
Well, no, we don't. But it's a good point. We try not to.
We try our best not to.
Right.
What we do is at least ingest and process information that our listeners and the people who watch the show and the people who follow the case will send to us. And we had one of our listeners point out a very simple fact recently. We keep talking about this like 3 minutes, and I was huge on that. I was huge on this, like, there's only a matter of like a couple minutes. We got to narrow down the minutes. And someone sent a suggestion saying, well, what if she just like hid behind a tree? What if she hid behind something? What if she hid underneath the stairs on the weathered barn, because there's a ramp? What if she tucked in there? They didn't specifically say that, but they basically said, I know there was no tracks in the woods,
right?
But you could go down Old Peters Road and walk within the tire tracks from another vehicle, and you can simply just watch and wait for the scene to die down. I mean, there's a lot of scenarios that could put her being abducted maybe 2 hours later.
But to counter that, it's also like a very quick assessment of like what she's going to do. You know what I mean? Like, as far as like a person who just like crashed into a snowbank, even though it wasn't a bad crash because we saw the car. Yes, we did. We went and saw the car and it wasn't like that bad. But anyway, that's even those few minutes, and not to hang on that, but that's a very, you know.
You're saying that's a very quick assessment on her part to get into the accident. Butch drives away and she's like, I'm just going to go chill out.
She went in like mission mode, like, okay, I'm going to hide for right now before the cops come.
Yeah.
And do all this. But I mean, it's very interesting. And that just goes to show that there are so many like avenues and like little parts that people can like dive into.
I guess the example itself doesn't matter much.
Right. But it just goes to show.
Just goes to show how long can you work on this before someone just hears something, it clicks in their head, and they go, you guys never really talk about this.
Right.
You hear like, oh, the police searched around the weather barn. So you just
write it off.
Yeah. So it's gone, you know. But it is true. She could have, you know, jogged up old Peter's Road and hung out for a little bit and waited till the scene died down. But I also agree. I think your point, Josh, is very valid. I think Maura also probably hit her head on the windshield. I don't think she was probably thinking that like straight at that moment. Obviously, I have no idea.
Well, it's all very interesting and still, no matter what, very relevant until there's answers, and that's why you guys keep doing what you do, even after the Oxygen show. And our documentary is certainly going to be an awesome part of the story. Not that we're trying to put ourselves into the narrative, which it seems like that's a thing that people try to do.
That is a thing.
It is a thing. At least for me personally, it came from a good place, a decent place, where I wanted to be part of something good and on an adventure with my friends. That's where I was coming from. And I felt that we could do it because I felt like we had some inside information or whatever you want to say. So, but it was an interesting time. Very interesting.